Hello and welcome to the Next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. So, Graham, we're going to delve into the world of non-profits today.
We are. We have a very, very special guest all the way from America. Her name is Teresa Carrington. Teresa, welcome to the Next 100 Days podcast.
Thank you so much, Graham and Kevin. I'm super excited to be here. You live in one of the countries that I have not visited, but very much desire to do so. I hope tea is available and I'm coming over.
Yeah, tea will definitely be available.
I think you could do a really good job with your day job over here, but never mind. That's another story.
Yes.
We're going to get into your day job in a second, but I remember, just to contextualize some of the things, about a year or so, maybe a bit less than that, I was asked by Elle Wilson, who you know very well, and has been a previous guest. She said, could you just sort of mock up this video that I'd done with you? And I have to say, I did it. It was quite difficult right at the end because it kind of got a bit fuzzy. But basically, the story was of a girl in Dhaka, Bangladesh. Do you want to take it from there?
Yeah. So it's 2009 and I'm sitting stuck in traffic in Dhaka, Bangladesh. And the city there's no good sanitation. There is no good air quality. So you can imagine it is just... it's a sweltering day. I'm lucky enough to have electricity in my car, but it was a pretty grimy place. And as I'm stuck in traffic, up to my passenger side window comes a little girl, and she's about 6 years old, and she is begging at my window. And I sat there and sort of looked at her and thought, is this who we're going to be? Are we going to be the organization who treats the symptom? Where did she come from? As I sat there and looked at her, and I knew enough to know, because I'd been to Dhaka before, there is an absolute mafia there that takes children from the impoverished communities, which are typically rural, the typically uneducated, and they come to those communities and look into the eyes of the mothers of little girls like that. And they say, I've made it big in the big city. You can never give this little girl an education. You can't even feed her. Let me do my part for society. Let me take her to the big city. I'll give her an education. I'll feed her. I'll give her a beautiful home. And with poverty gripping their neck, the mothers say yes. And I knew that some story similar to that would have been what brought that little girl to my window. And as traffic began to move, she started running alongside us. And I thought right then and there, I know that there is someone watching you right now who is waiting to see what I give. And if I don't give you anything, I recognize that you're going to pay some kind of price. But if I do give, I am perpetuating the stealing of children from their mothers. And I made a strong stand and a conviction in that moment that we were going to become a fierce defender of women in rural areas who were gripped by poverty, having to make desperate choices like that. Today, I can tell you not a single woman that 10x3 works with in the country of Bangladesh is putting their daughter in that situation today, because they're empowered and money is freedom for them. So we stopped it at its root.
For those people who want to see the visual of that moment, you were kind enough to share some of the footage. And
yes.
Pretty sure that I've already put it onto the show notes. So I was taken back by it. Anybody who's had children and sees that young girl, the eyes, they haunt you. And I think you've made a really, really tough decision. I'm not sure. I went to India last year and I made the opposite decision. You know, I mean, here's some money. But then with others, I didn't. So basically, there was some that I did and some that I didn't. And it's just, It is an incredibly difficult decision, but that speaks to the sort of backbone that you have that's helped create 10 by 3. Now, for those people listening, they've already got a great idea of you and your personality. But tell us a little bit about 10 by 3.
So 10 by 3 is a 501c3 nonprofit that I founded 20 years ago when I was a tall blonde supermodel and I didn't have all this gray hair. So this is what development work will do to your face, Graham. Like, this is what it does to your face. So be careful out there.
I'm always the before picture rather than the, I mean, Kevin's the after picture. He's a bit
yeah,
like,
I yeah. see. I knew that instantly.
He's George Clooney in a different life. But
yeah.
Well, so I'll take that for the Brian. That's definitely not the after picture, George Clooney.
I don't know. You're both looking pretty good to me. So 20 years ago, I founded my organization. And at the time, I started calling it the Blessing Basket Project. And then in 2018, we rebranded to 10 by 3. But it's a nonprofit organization. And we rebranded because in about a 15-year span of time, I always believed from the minute go that there was a formula that could end poverty. You should see some of the earlier ones. It looks like one of Flint's heuristics. It's really long, you know. Yeah. But I always believed that there was a formula. And as time went on, I started to study who among our artisans was being successful and why. And it took quite a bit of study. But after time, I realized the critical component is when they reach three small businesses. When a woman has three businesses, there's no single point of failure. Mm. So that's why the three in our name, it stands for three businesses. The 10, we know that when we purchase 10 of these artisan goods from an artisan at prosperity wages, which is 2.5 times fair trade, that is an important number. So 10 products a month at prosperity wages, 2.5 times fair trade, in exchange for that, they are required to start three small businesses outside of their handicraft. We don't care what they are. There have to be three. And those three businesses will go on to produce, on average, 4 streams of income apiece. So we take a woman who is in abject poverty, use the skills that she's already got, and pay her this more than amount, and she will now have at least 12 streams of income coming into her family. And it doesn't take very long, Graham, between 3 and 5 years, depending on how many children, and she'll be sustainably out of poverty.
I've seen the pictures, and anybody wants to find out more about 10 by 3, the website is 10by3.org. So it's dead simple, 10, the word, by 3, the word, and .org. You go there, you get an immediate impression of how you can help. Now, we're in the United Kingdom, and at the moment, I'm not 100% sure whether we can buy these baskets, or can we?
You can't buy them in the UK, so that's an area of growth for us. So yeah. I would say to the powerful people who are listening to your podcast right now, that you, mm-hmm. or people that you and Kevin know,
yeah.
we've been told if I had a US dollar for every time somebody said, are you in the UK? Are you in Europe anywhere? I'd be a millionaire. That's going to take people like you who have connections to somebody who has a warehouse who can really help us get going. Let's get going. We have a product that would fly off the shelves there because it's so high quality and the purpose is so clear. So no, not yet. But that doesn't mean your audience can't help. They can help. There's a lot of impact that they can help us make, not only to get started there, but to help us with the work.
So if the retailers that might be listening to us, they would actually buy it like any other sort of product.
That's right.
They would make a margin on it, but the actual product itself is helping these ladies. And they Absolutely. Are all ladies, aren't they? That you start with women. It's not men. It's the women of the family.
We work with men and women, asterisk. Most of, for example, in Uganda, women weaving is considered woman's work. A man would not be caught weaving.
Right.
Now, interesting story, in Bangladesh, which is way up high, I can't reach it right now,
yeah.
but in Bangladesh, we started with only women, hundreds of them. And the men came to me and said, what about us? Why, you know, we need something too. And I said, well, can you weave? Oh, that's for women. Ah, we don't weave. We're men. We don't weave. Do you know, 10 years later, I had a line of 20 of them waiting to join. And we do have a handful of men now in Bangladesh who weave.
Okay. Oh, well, that's good. Well, I'm not sure it's good or bad, actually, to be honest with you. At the end of the day, you're helping. And you've not just helped a handful. You've helped lots more, haven't you?
Yeah, it's into the tens of thousands now. So, but what we're interested in is not so much the big number, but the number one, the individual, to make sure that we make a lasting, deep, sustainable impact, that they never return to poverty again. And so while over 20 years, that has now amounted to a lot of people, it was done one human life at a time.
I remember at college, this is, I went to something called a polytechnic. Now that's, it's like a university nowadays. They don't call it that anymore, but Kevin would have gone to a posh university. I mean, it's a bit bright. So, but I went to the poly, you know, and anyway, the thing about it was, is that I remember having to study trade, and there was this phrase, trade, not aid. And it stuck with me, and I read around it, and it felt like it was the right strategy. Why just ship a whole load of money over there? And as we find in your country, but we're finding in ours as well, don't always get spent that wisely. And right. So basically, you know, the in fact, it's often corrupted. So the idea of actually shipping a load of money out to various countries is probably a fool's errand. Even though you might have the best intentions, that money gets dissipated and gets used for not for the reasons that you're sending it. And whereas what you're doing seems to be almost like a model that others could adopt. Not just now, I don't know how precious you would be about that. Probably not. If somebody came along and said, yep, this is actually the way we're going to do it. And if they had you as the principal and saying, do it this way, would you be in favor of that? As in, you know, with government support almost like. So your president came along, knocked on your door and said, Teresa, I want you to do this for us. But and here's a shed load to help you make it work.
Right.
How would you feel?
We absolutely want, we want to share the model. Listen, Graham, you know, there we have these things called the Sustainable Development Goals, and everybody has an opinion on them. But here's one thing I know, that there's 193 countries in this world, and there's only one thing on which they all agree. That if we don't do these 17 things, then the human race is at stake. Our earth is at stake and the human race is at stake. They all agree on that. And you know, the number one, the one on which all the others stack, is poverty. So if we can get that and we can take care of that, then all the other problems begin to take care of themselves, because money, that's why poverty is number one. So if, as a human being, I believe that we have one of the best answers to sustainably end extreme poverty in developing nations, I have an obligation to the human race and to my morals and my ethics to share that model. We're already talking to the governments of Uganda and Ghana, and I don't mean any government. I mean the head of the Ministry of Gender, the head of the Labor Department. And, you know, I can't wait. I hope our conversation steers into the world of tariffs and USAID and what all of that has meant to organizations like us. But we want this model replicated. I want the 10x3 model used in governments around the world, by nonprofits around the world, because it is a model that has proven over 20 years to work. And then I can sit down and rest.
I mean, even though you've helped tens of thousands of people, or you know, into the tens of thousands, how many women are there in and in poverty? I mean, it's got to be 2 billion.
It's a huge number. 11% of the world's population still lives in extreme poverty, and I call it the final mile of poverty, because the vast majority of them are in rural areas that most organizations won't go. It is hard to go where we go, Graham. We are not in the capital cities. We are not where it is convenient to operate. We are at the end of roads that have no name, that were blazed by a goat, literally. I call them Imbuzi roads. That's the Ugandan word for goat. It's a goat road. And that's where we do our best work.
Yeah, but Kevin lives in a particular area a bit like that as well, like goat roads.
So, Kevin, you should come along with me. You would be right at home.
Absolutely. And it's not so much goats up here, it's sheep.
Okay, perfect. We have sheep where we go, many of them, in fact. In fact, it's one of the businesses that many of our artisans start. So they need your help, Kevin.
No, yeah, and that was a question I was going to ask you, Teresa. You've bought 10 products from a person. You've paid them more than the going rate, so they've got some hand. Oh. Starting a business though isn't easy. How do they find three businesses to start?
Yeah. So first of all, they're very ingenious. Let's be frank. People who look like the three of us have taught people who look like our artisans, which are black and brown, that the more poor and pathetic they present themselves, the more the donor will give. And never were those models based on dignity, respect for the acumen that they already have. You want to find a industrious and innovative entrepreneur, you talk to somebody who doesn't have money, because they have to think more creatively. They have to and they respond with, you know, what little they have. They can do more with it than most. So I'm standing under a shed in Ghana, and I'm talking to a woman who's named Manager, and I'm talking to her about one of the businesses that she started with her 10x3 weaving money. And it is a rice ball business. She has a family recipe for rice balls in peanut soup that is to die for. And if you don't get to her spot by before 8 a.m., you will not get any of her rice balls and a peanut soup. And so I asked her, Manager, how do you know what to charge? And she said, well, in the beginning, I didn't. I put together my ingredients. I sold my product. And if I had no money on Friday, I knew I wasn't making any money. I mean, how simple is it? I mean, come on. Like, how much can we all learn from that? And so how do they start three businesses? From just true ingenuity. Am I making sense? And these are not, they are not going out and starting the next, you know, financial investment company or marketing company like the two of you. They are going out and saying, I know chickens and I have the ground for chickens and I'm going to buy three chickens. And that is a very small capital business to get started in. Immediately they've got four streams of income. They're selling the chicks, they're selling the eggs, they're selling the chickens themselves, they're selling the manure for a fertilizer. Four streams of income from just a few chickens, right? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about them starting three businesses, please don't think of high rises and cars and marketing and staff. It's not like that at all. Mm-hmm. These are micro businesses that will fully pull them out of poverty. And people ask us all the time, what kind of business advice? Do you train entrepreneurs? No. You know what they need? They need one less white person telling them how to get it done. They know exactly how to raise their chickens. They know exactly how to raise those cows. And they'll do a much better job of anything I guide them to do.
So when you're in their company, and I know there are some wonderful pictures on your website where you're surrounded by these wonderful people. Do you actually get into this position of saying, have you thought about? I know it's not about telling them to do something, but they're looking for inspiration. Do you feel, you know, well, this lady over in this part of the world does the chicken thing. So, I mean, do you share that type of help, if you like?
We do, with an asterisk.
Yeah.
Every single one of our artisans, we follow them. The technology that we use to track all of this would blow your mind, and we probably need another podcast to talk about that. But one of the things we do is talk to all of our artisans throughout the year. And those conversations are typically fairly public. We'll get a group of people together. We're buying baskets over here. They're interviewing over here. So there's a lot of information that is shared in those interviews. But do you know the most powerful thing we've done over the years that has helped the spread of entrepreneurial energy is roofs and floors. We found that when we put a concrete floor somewhere and we put a roof over it, people gather and they weave and ideas are shared amongst each other. So if we can give people just a simple place to gather, information about how to raise mushrooms, why is my goat dying, I'm not getting as much milk from my cow, that kind of information is being shared so rapidly. And then they also have the observation of their neighbor. They are watching to see what is their neighbor doing with their weaving money and how well are they doing, and all of their children are in school. So there's a very powerful transfer of knowledge in observation and in roofs and floors when we can gather really smart entrepreneurial women to share with the other women. So
just imagine, Kevin, if the North East had a little bit more roofs and floors, just think what you can make of yourselves up there.
Yeah. Well, at Sunderland, they've got to go and sort that out in.
Well, they'll all be very happy at the moment because they're one game away from the Premier League. But we'll see. The world wants Sunderland to win, but Sheffield in Yorkshire they don't want them. But anyway, we're talking about soccer, so basically don't worry.
I love it.
But the thing about you is like you said, you started life as a, well, one of the things that you started doing when you were younger was this beautiful woman, and you know, you were, like you said, you were a model. I mean, tell us a little bit about that, because you went from that person, and I know there's been ups and downs. We have a song about it at my football team, but there has been ups and downs. Tell us about that up, because you're quite obviously a very beautiful woman. So tell us about that part of your life.
Well, I am actually joking. I was never a model, but
it
I was a journalist.
Like it does look like you
well,
were. I mean,
oh, Graham, your flattery will get you everywhere.
No, no, it's just my innocence. I mean, if you said you used to be, you used to be a barking dog, I'd have said, yeah, well, tell us about that.
Oh, you're so sweet. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't have the legs to be a model. And I also don't have the legs to be a basketball player, which I realized finally when I hit high school. I really, you have to be tall. You have to be over 5'2". I got it. Okay, I got it. But I was a journalist for 20 years. And that is why you see such a strong storytelling component to the work that we do. But, you know, I get asked a lot, why? Like you, Graham, and you, Kevin, you're incredibly talented in your world. And, you know, I could do a lot of things in this world, but I choose to do this now. And it's not because I'm independently wealthy. I had come from nothing. I was an orphan when I was born. My mom was in prison. I had one hell of a time. And for all reasons that, you know, we stereotypes, I shouldn't be sitting here. Should not. I should be strung out on a street somewhere. Most people can't handle my life story. So I don't tell it because I see the pain that it can bring to another human being to learn what I've been through. But let me tell you something. To anyone who's listening to your podcast right now and has been through some hell, whatever it may be, I call it our it. We all have it. We all have something we've been through. If you don't use that in a way to do something in this world that no one else, in a way that no one else can, you're taking something from all of us. So I go through hell in life. You know, by the time I'm six, I've bounced from foster home to foster home, and every horror that can happen to a child has happened to me. And it's just a horrible, horrible childhood. But you know, Graham, if I don't do something with that, those guys win. Those SOBs win. But if I can take that pain, that understanding, that lived experience, and I can look into the eyes of a child, and I can bring something of meaning to their life that can truly change their life, that doesn't see their pity, that there's no pity there, that I can look at them and I go, I got you. And it's not free, but we're going to do this together. We're going to do this in partnership. You've not heard me say anything about free, right? So I get asked a lot, as I said, why? Why do you do this? Because I am busy repaying a very, very important debt. Because at every dark space in my life, at every point when I just thought there was not another step I could take, life had just smashed me so hard, somebody would come along and I would suddenly find my light bill had been paid, or I'd come out in the morning and there was a sea of groceries to feed myself and my children. What can you do for someone, especially when they're anonymous? A lot of these acts of love and kindness in my life were anonymous. How do you pay them back?
Mm-hmm.
You cannot. So all you can do is pay it forward. So as your listeners are listening to this podcast right now, if they don't remember anything else we talk about today, I hope that they remember that they are uniquely equipped to do something in this world that in a way that no one else can do. And so when it came to why am I here? What good can I bring? How can I pay this debt forward into others in this world? I said, poverty is what it's going to be. I grew up in poverty, grew up below the poverty line. This is something I know a lot about, and I can bring my unique gifts and skills to this topic. The how we're going to do it, I began to collect cards and letters of love in a basket, and I started calling it my blessing basket. And it was those cards and letters, rereading them, that put me back together during some of the darkest times of my life. And I thought, that's it. We're going to have people in this world who have skill make baskets, and we're going to use them to bless them. And that's how I got here. And that's where the desire comes from to run this organization.
You actually remind me of a fictional character, although I'm not sure she's actually fictional. Erin Brockovich, and you remind me of her. Made such a difference in her own life and in the life of others. But you have remarkable qualities, and everybody's just heard your previous comments, knows that about you, and they feel it, and they're right to feel it. What that means for them and for us and for Kevin in particular, I mean, because he's the one who's really got to learn about all this.
I know. That's why we're really here.
Just you and me. Yeah. But Kevin. But he... Sorry, Kevin. I'm always doing this. But... Yeah, but we ought to get another little sort of picture with, and we'll pick on that person rather than you. But no, you are... There's that drive in you which only says to me that you will attract people to you. You will make a massive difference in the lives of people who you don't know in the next few years. So basically people are kind of waiting for you to come along and for your organization to come along. And
right.
You make a difference in their lives. And and actually, for those people who are buying those baskets, I mean, they look quality baskets. They're not just any old baskets.
Yeah.
They're well put together.
And, you can hear. Yeah. Like, if you hear this, you can hear how solid this is. All of our products are that way. You're right, Graham.
But you can have that. I mean, do they stand the test of being outside, or is it very much an inside basket? I don't quite know.
Yeah, it depends on the product. We have some that are from India, which I don't happen to have an easy reach. Those would do outside because they're made of cane. You probably have cane furniture, or have seen
right.
it or sat in it.
Sure.
Some of the others, this one will do okay in a water. But it is still a natural fiber. And as all natural fibers do, given enough sunlight and water, they will break down. Something like this, you would not want to put outside because once it gets wet, it would not do well. So it just depends on the product.
But,
that's
going to change people's lives. And actually, all the people who are buying those products, how good must they feel that they're helping somebody? And I think it's a subtle transfer of love, I guess. But I don't know what else you'd call it.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. And what's one of the unique things about 10 by 3 is not only our model, it's clear, it's very, people understand it. 10 of these equals three small businesses for the artisan, and we track it. We require it. We require that they do it. Do you know how badly I was criticized by global experts? World, I mean, I talked to a Nobel Economic Laureate, not just talked to him, went to him for guidance, went to him for advice. And said, I have this little thing, this is what I'm doing, and this is what I'm seeing. And you know, Graham, I don't have a college education. Poverty kept me from that. I have an honorary doctorate today, which I'm really proud of. But I don't, you know, I so I went to the experts, and this guy became enraged. He said, who do you think you are? I counsel the governments of China. I've been doing this for 30 years. And you think you're just going to come along and find a solution? I mean, just who do you think you are asking them to start these businesses? They're just going to throw the money on the ground. They don't know what to do with it. And in my mind, I'm thinking, you so-and-so, you've never been poor, have you? You don't know that when you're given money, you know exactly what the f to do with it, right? And as a result of that, and these strong stories that I've shared a few of today, we make sure that we put the very face of the very artisan on the very product that they make. This is not a poster child. This is not somebody we guessed made this item. This is her. And how do we know that? We developed a UN award-winning platform that is tracked by this code right here, which is put in on that product by the artisan. And then we're able to put her face. And on the back is an artisan code. You go to our website, put that code in, and you can actually start exchanging digital letters with her. We have translators on the ground in every country to deliver these letters. And here, and why? Why do we do that? Because I think that authentic human connection creates peace. I think our world can become more peaceful.
You're telling a story about that Nobel, whatever it is,
Yeah.
whatever.
Yep, he was a Nobel
Yeah.
Economic Laureate.
Well, they give Nobel Prizes to all kinds of but never to the right people. However, did he really throw his arms around like you were show, or is that just license?
Part of it is my animation, but I can tell you he pounded on his desk. He had a wooden desk, big,
Yes.
think of a very prestigious university, very big, you know, sort of mahogany style desk, and he was like this.
That's just
He said,
incredible.
who do you think you are? I counsel the governments of China. And I was like, I don't even know where to go with this. And you know what I actually thought in reflection as I left the meeting, and I was upset. Came for guidance from the mountain, you know, and the mountain roared at me instead. I realized later I was looking at fear. Fear that there might be another way. Fear that this might actually work. And of course, he has long since passed away. And I wish I could call him back to a coffee and say, you know, do you remember that day? And here we are 20 years later, and tens of thousands of people affected. And, you know, do
Well,
you
if he's
still
lucky,
feel
there'll
that
be
same
somebody
way?
up there who will probably have counseled him a little bit. But having
I
said
hope so.
that, but
I hope so.
might have gone the other direction.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
Kevin, what you've learned so far about 10 by 3, what are your impressions? Because you could be a buyer of this stuff. Because I mean, Ruth, as you said earlier, she's exercised by the sort of Chelsea flower show, and these are the sorts of baskets that potentially you could fill
Yeah.
flowers, spilling out in your house.
I very much get the model and it makes sense. It's sustainable. It's a non-profit that has an income stream through selling this stuff.
Yes, we do.
Therefore, it's a continual process. It's sustainable in itself. And I love the model. So many nonprofits are just l relying on grants and the donations, but this is a genuine way of trading to success. But that does lead another question there, Teresa. Is there a grant and donation side to this charity?
Yes. Every year we'll sell about $2 million worth of products. My budget runs about 2.3, and so I have to raise that gap. Now, we have a lot of smart advisors and people who guide, and we're working hard to try to close that gap and figure out a way to operationally have 10 by 3's sales support its main operations, so that when we go to raise money, it's to enter another country, it's for capacity building, you know, putting in a well or a school where we feel like it's needed, but we're not quite there yet. So, you know, we raise more than 80% of our money ourselves. We feel like we owe that to any donor who should give us money. And you shouldn't give us money unless we can show you how it's going to help make us more sustainable. And that's our requirement for ourselves, you know. And as a result, we do have a great deal of trust among the people who do give us their money, of course, for which we're incredibly grateful. But I think we have just a unique model that speaks to entrepreneurs like the two of you. They understand that we are putting in the lion's share of the work on the front. And what you're really doing is just honoring that work.
So the trading model is fully sustainable.
It is almost. We're still losing some money. Like I said, it takes about $2.3 million right now to run the organization, and we're selling about two. It's getting there. We're close.
Is that 0.3 because you're going in places and you're saying, well, we need that concrete floor here. We need the roof over it to fall.
Part of it is that. You're exactly right. I bet, Kevin, you're right. If we pulled some of those things out of our P&L, that we might be much closer to grade. You know, and that level of sales, it depends on how sales are going that year. You know, I think last year we ended at like 1.8. We had a tough year last year. So it does ebb and flow, and it does make it, you know, we're running a business. We think that the 501c3, the nonprofit piece of it, is just a tax classification. It's our job first to run a really smart, strong business. And when we do that, then we feel that we are earning the right to have a conversation with a donor who can really count on their money being used wisely, very wisely.
I've spent probably more than my fair share of my marketing time working with charities in particular. And one of the things that makes them all fairly, and I've actually been a trustee of a charity as well. So basically, one of the things that they all pretty much rely on are legacies. Is that something that you have considered? So, a legacy where somebody, and leaves some money to 10 by 3, does that feature as part of your income raising?
It does, but it doesn't. We don't have any. We tell people that, of course, they can think about us in legacy giving. I can tell you that over the years, we've received maybe a handful, maybe five calls from attorneys who say, I'm attorney so-and-so. And of course, they never reveal the name of the person, but I'm calling on behalf of an estate and they are putting you into their estate. So I'm aware that some donors are considering us part of their legacy giving, but we have yet to receive any kind of a legacy gift. Maybe that's an area that you can help us grow in, Graham. Like maybe we could do a better job.
Well, that sounds like it. There's a big opportunity there, but it's just the idea that you know, people do die and they make some decisions about how they're going to spend that money, family and so forth, and things that they've had interest in. But the idea of actually spreading, what do you call it? I said love earlier, but basically that's too sort of ethereal. Spreading the ability to be out of poverty, you know, getting out of without being too woo-woo, you know, and certainly without being angry, you know, angry at the world and so forth. And I don't perceive that. I don't perceive you to being angry. I perceive being so positive about helping people. And that's a different gravy in my view. But so many people kind of use it as a stick to beat others with, unnecessarily in my view. But I think from my point of view, I think there'll be a lot of people with the right kind of arguments placed in front of them that potentially could say, well, actually, and it might be that some people listening to this podcast who are saying, well, you know what, that's a pretty good idea, because we do have quite a number of American listeners Goodness knows
Oh,
why. I mean, Kevin bores them to death. I don't know why. I mean,
wow.
he's always on
Kevin,
about
you need a
something.
raise, man. You need a raise. I think Kevin qualifies for hazard pay, where he has to
I
put up
definitely
with
agree with
Graham.
you.
No,
Graham's picking on me extraordinarily well today, I've got
I'm not.
to
But you're not actually out of your cold, Kevin. So basically, you said that you were
Yeah.
earlier, but you're not. So anyway, so I would. No, I think there's a great opportunity for you there, and even if it just covers that sort of, gives you a bit of a bridge,
Right.
in terms of trading per annum, then I think it could be a worthwhile view. It'd be really quite
Yeah.
interesting if you look at the Charities Commission in the UK, and look at how much of their incomes comes from legacies. It's huge,
Wow.
huge.
Wow.
Every one of them.
Yeah. We
Every
have
one of them.
not benefited yet from a legacy. We do know we're on people's radar, but maybe we could do a better job of promoting that and
I think
actually making it a part of our plan.
I'd qualify what you said there, Graham. I think the huge charities in the UK, the British Heart Foundation, Cancer Relief, charities like that, make a huge amount of money out of legacies. I'm not sure that the smaller charities do the same thing.
Well, I think they have active marketers who basically go to solicitors and so forth, and I think that's basically part and parcel of it's a bit like, well, they would, wouldn't they? And I think that's that. But I think that every charity I've ever come across wants legacies. So, including the one that I was a trustee of. So, but,
Oh.
we had a legacy plan. So basically, all I'm trying to say is that it's something, and it's not like you're undeserving. You're not. I mean, what you're doing in life is really, really important. But going back to you, in the next few years, what do you want to achieve with 10 by 3?
Well, it's a pretty simple plan. We'd like to be in more of the world's top 20 poorest nations. We're in seven nations today. Only three of them today still are in the top 20. So we would like to enter more top 20 poor nations. That will take funding. That will take money. It's capacity we don't have. You've just heard my budget. You've just heard I have a gap. I'm still struggling there. So that's goal number one. Goal number two is that our model is spreading. The 10 by 3 model, I believe, is a gold standard by which nonprofits can operate and governments can operate. Imagine, Graham, how many people we could help just in one country. If the country of Ghana made the 10 by 3 model part of their economic policy, which I've already spoken to them about, they could begin to develop from within. They don't need a USAID, they don't need the exterior money. Let's figure out this model will work to help them develop from within their own country, from their own resources like trade of cocoa, of coffee, of et cetera. So to spread the model. And then the final layer would be to have enough financial reserves that the organization doesn't always have to make a decision in where everything feels like it might be a crisis. We don't have enough of a nest egg in our coffers. So when a small disruption hits, it carries tremendous weight because so much is riding. I never want to become fat and happy. Does that make sense? I never want to have so much money that we don't care, whatever. I like being scrappy because you think more innovative, but there's a difference between that and sort of where we are today. So enter more top 20 countries, have the model spread, and have some financial security to keep doing more of the same.
Kevin, you're a kind of betting man. You know numbers at least. What are the chances that Theresa's going to actually make that?
I think chances are very high because it's nothing to do with numbers at all. It's to do with passion. And all the way through this conversation, everything Theresa said to us has just exuded that passion and that purpose. If you put that in there, that can overcome just about everything. Now, there's not much that's going to get in the way and knock Teresa off track. And I like this sort of scruffy approach to it because it means that a problem comes up, we'll think our way around it.
Yeah, and that's what we've been doing for 20 years. And so I think it's definitely a challenge set before me, Graham. And if I really want to get into those top 20, some of the more of those top 20 nations, I need to figure out a way to make the business side profitable, which we're working on. So we kind of know the steps. And, you know, Kevin, I agree with you. You know, passion definitely got me here. However, in order to hand it off, I've got to set, you know, a stronger foundation, because you guys are the founders of your own companies. And, you know, would the person that you may pass it off to, will they ever have the passion that the founder does? It's unlikely, but you can get pretty close. So, yes, Graham, you're right. I have my work cut out for me. And Kevin, yes, you're right that it's passion that'll get me there.
Kevin sits there quietly, but he comes out with some absolute nuggets on every podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's actually quite a prolific podcaster as well, because he does another podcast, which he hasn't mentioned on this one. Because I usually
enough on that other podcast. I'm recording a series at the moment, talking to the finance leaders in nonprofits. I spoke yesterday to a finance leader again, in a charity that's mostly about alleviating poverty. It's actually grown out of a church in North London, but they're operating a community in North London, and they're operating overseas. And the same sorts of passions are coming over there. And we were talking a lot about donors and how do you build trust with donors. Had a really fascinating conversation yesterday. So yeah, it's a theme that I'm pursuing right now, find out more about.
He tells us that right at the end of the podcast.
Right at the end. I need your guidance, Kevin, man. I need your help. You got a lot of good knowledge there.
He certainly does. But you're not going to get it on the next 100 days podcast, but you have been a brilliant guest, Teresa. Look, for those people who would love to have more of you, then they must go to 10by3.org and find out more about Teresa Carrington, because you are just a wonderful person that's changing the world in the positive way. And Kevin spots that as well. And Kevin's got a lie detector. We talk about you after we send you away. He's usually quite cruel about guests, but I'm not.
I know, he can be like that.
You know, you can tell that. His eyes are set too close together. It's all of them.
It's something.
It's
yeah.
Something.
Arrowsmith's for it after today's podcast.
I know, I'm going to get it. Anyway, but Teresa, thank you for being a wonderful guest on the next 100 Days podcast.
So, Graham, as I said at the end, there's one thing that comes out of that, and that's just absolute passion for what she does.
Yeah, it comes across in spades, doesn't it? Right from the very beginning to the very end, she's full on. What a driver of I don't know, what do you call it? A solution to poverty. Mm. The other people, the kind of the posh, we know it all types, don't necessarily ascribe to, but the people, if you have a look at the website and the smiles on the faces of the artisans, as they're called, and they are, you saw some of the if you've seen the videos of this podcast, you saw some of the artwork, some of the work that they've produced. Fantastic, really, really good baskets, and you know, worth paying for. So, yeah, I agree with you, Kevin. She's a force of nature. And I'm glad that she's in our circle. And, yeah, maybe we can help her in other ways.
Well, I'd say to any listener of this episode, do you have the sort of passion and purpose for what you do, as we've heard on this particular episode? And, you know, one thing that I'd note, every time we've talked about those 17 global goals, when anybody's been involved in going after one of those in particular, the level of passion that we've heard as part of the conversation has been huge.
Yeah, I don't know, 17 is an odd number, isn't it? I wish they could boil it down to 6 or something like that. But having said that, there are so many.
It's easy, you just got to solve 11 of them.
I think that's something that we can perhaps pick up on another time. But we have talked about that in the past. That's one of the things that we have talked about. But I would say that today it's been just a wonderful podcast, uplifting. Because if we can all contribute in some way to buy these things to help Teresa's company, business or non-profit to flourish, that means by definition the people who need it most are flourishing, and you've not got this off ramp where monies can go to corrupt individuals. That's the thing that this particular program bakes in. There is no off ramp, and so that is something that I think that in a way is why, if you're thinking about a legacy, what on earth would you give it to some company, some charities, when so much of their income goes to pay salaries?
I also think back to daughter Kate, who ended up doing a degree in social anthropology at university. And some of the things that they looked at were what went on in emerging nations, such as the ones we've been talking about today, when the white man's come along with loads of money or loads of aid, principally thinking they're doing some good, but not actually asking that community what they wanted in the first place. And a lot of the stories that emerge from that is that the so-called aid has caused more problems than it's solved.
Trade not aid, Kevin. So on that bombshell, I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.